Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
In life, we can take a wrong turn, we can meander around, we can be lost, sometimes for years. And if we could take that principle, that word of recalculating, of starting anew, of letting go of what did or did not happen and beginning again, how powerful that could be. And I started to develop the five directions for recalculating, and it just clicked. It just felt right. It resonated with people. I also thought, how powerful. People can then get in their car and they can be on a trip and then they hear the word recalculating, and it's a built-in reminder that they can start again at any moment.
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from the beautiful place called Airlie Beach in the Whitsundays, Queensland, Australia, Karen Jacobson, who's the GPS girl. Karen, welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Henry DeVries from Indie Books International, he introduced us and suggested that we have a conversation. So big hello to Henry. And Karen,
fabulous.
Or actually for the listeners, if you're in Australia or you like listening to Australian-based voices when you're driving your car, Karen's probably told you where to go on more than one occasion. I know she has for me. Karen is the voice of GPS. She's the voice, the Australian voice of GPS, of Siri, of Google Maps, and whatever else is out there giving directions in cars. And she's now transitioned to business under the philosophy of recalculating, which is a word that's used a lot in those GPS systems. So, Karen, I'm really looking forward to kind of learning more about your journey and also about your business today and how that philosophy applies to business. Before we do that, though, what's the impact that you aim to make in the world today?
Oh, goodness. I am really somebody who loves to create a life that inspires me and to inspire others to do the same. You know, when we're in our everyday life and life is happening to us, it can seem like a lot. It is really a real focus for me to remind others that it is never too late to recalculate. It is never too late to create aspects of your life the way you would love them to be. So I think that's my main philosophy.
Yeah, I love it. And I was reflecting on this before because I was having a conversation over lunch with my wife about a community bank board that I'm involved in, and there was a conversation there around, oh, the other boards are not participating the way we are and they're not as active as we are, and I wish they'd do some more and contribute to the greater good. And I kind of responded to that and I said, well, in some ways, that's the price of leadership, and it's also the responsibility of us if we're kind of leading the way here and forging a new path to inspire others to follow us. So, but when they do, isn't it so fulfilling?
It is so fulfilling. And, you know, if we all could bottle the way of being able to have somebody else understand that they have more control over the outcomes in their lives than they think, I think that would be the holy grail. And to be able to motivate others to get the profound difference that they make, can make by just walking into a room. But it's not it's not quite that easy, and the pathway to the light bulb going on is very different for each individual person.
I think it's something, as you said, we can all make a huge difference simply by walking in the room, and sometimes it's a little thing like just a smile or acknowledging somebody or giving somebody the space to speak who may not necessarily be the outgoing person in the room who will kind of jump into a conversation and speak up. Those little things can make such a difference and create such an impact. And often people are so trapped in what do others think of me mindset, as opposed to just forget about that because that's for them to work out, and just do what you think is right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the way you say that, because there was a point in my life maybe 5 years ago where I came to a turning point. I'd had a huge disappointment professionally, and I just decided to give myself a sabbatical, and my number one job every day was to just wake up and do what felt right, what I knew felt right for me. And that meant a lot less networking, and it meant a lot less, you know, appointments, and a lot more space in my calendar to just get back to what I loved spending my time doing, which made me feel better, which had things show up very differently in my life and in my business in a whole new way.
Yeah, one of the things I've got on my dashboard that I open up every day that's got my calendar on it, my to-do list, and where I keep my notes, one of the things that says right on the top, does this bring me joy or does this have an impact, positive impact on my customers? And I think that I know somebody pointed this out to me, kind of asking this question of does it bring me joy? And whenever I get to the point of being really frustrated with something because it's not working the way I want, then that question, does this bring me joy? Often I don't need to get frustrated by this. I don't need to be doing this because it doesn't actually bring me joy.
Yes.
All right. I love the idea that you've taken your experience as the GPS girl and the some of the words you've used there, and you've picked out recalculating as a metaphor for business and life. So tell us a little bit about how you came up with that idea, how you made that connection, and what you actually do today in that role.
Originally, I could see that there was something in it. There was something to do with the fact that my voice was in, at the time, hundreds of millions of devices. And it brought a lot of joy to people to know that it was my voice navigating them around. They really found that very fun and there was a familiarity with me right away. They wanted to tell me the name of their GPS and the wonderful trips we'd taken together. So there was definitely a hook there that had me think there was something to do with this. But it took me a while to figure out, and I thought that perhaps it was a travel brand because I love to travel. Travel is transformational, and all of those words with the GPS fit with having a travel brand. And at the time I was reading incredible personal and professional development books, and one of the questions was, but if you could do anything, like after you've done the thing that you think you're going to do next, like what is the thing you really want to do? And I thought, well, I would love to have an empowerment brand. So I quick smart, you know, I fast tracked to the empowerment brand and kind of leaped over the travel brand idea. And I realized that that term recalculating, which is heard when you take a wrong turn, when you are using your GPS or your smartphone. And I thought, well, what if we could use the power of recalculating in our own lives? Because we can be driving along the road, we take a wrong turn, the satellites work their magic, and then be in a few short turns usually, we're back headed where we want to go. And in life, we can take a wrong turn, we can meander around, we can be lost, sometimes for years. And if we could take that principle, that word of recalculating, of starting anew, of letting go of what did or did not happen and beginning again, how powerful that could be. And I started to develop the five directions for recalculating, and it just clicked. It just felt right, and it resonated with people. And I also thought, well, how powerful. People can then get in their car and they can be on a trip and then they hear the word recalculating, and it's a built-in reminder that they can start again at any moment.
Yes, that's, I thought that was brilliant, because it is, it's a trigger that you hear every day as soon as you turn on the GPS, right?
That's right.
I have to tell you a funny story, because coming back to the travel thing, we were I'm pretty sure I have your voice on my Google Maps.
Yeah.
So, and we were in the US last year on holiday, and I was fascinated because when we hired the car and I plugged in my phone and started it up, all of a sudden there was this American voice guiding us. And I thought, that's interesting. I haven't changed anything. It must be automatic. And a couple of days later, all of a sudden, there was the familiar voice I was used to, your voice. And we were kind of joking and saying, well, she must have missed the flight and had to get on a later flight.
She had to catch up. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
My goodness.
But the idea of recalculating, we heard that a lot on that trip, of course, because we were kind of in strange locations and we missed turnoffs and then it. But yeah, that metaphor of we knew where we wanted to go, but we got off track a couple of times, but we always ended up there. So it's a really brilliant metaphor.
That's the thing about the metaphor of recalculating too. It's trusting, which is easier said than done, that if you take a wrong turn, or what you perceive as a wrong turn in your life, personally or professionally, that you're possibly just on a detour, and that you will end up at the destination you wanted to be headed, or certainly for your highest good in the long run. For me personally, that's taken a lot of time over a number of years to build the ability to trust that. And when things don't go the way we thought they were going to be able to use that principle of recalculating, it just can make the experience so much more pleasant than it would be if we let ourselves get taken out for a long period of time.
Yeah, and there's so much that you can use in that metaphor to explain, isn't there? If we miss the turn to the destination, that doesn't mean we're not going to get to the destination. It may take
us
a little bit longer. It may, in fact, this happened to us on that trip that I mentioned a couple of times. We missed a turn and then we discovered something else and we thought, well, let's go and have a look at that while we're here.
Right.
And had a really fascinating experience and still ended up at our destination, albeit perhaps a little bit later than we'd anticipated. But it was still, it wasn't that, we've missed the turn, so we're not going to make our destination.
I think it's about looking at it being an alternative experience as opposed to a wrong experience. And we're so quick to judge ourselves and to judge others and to judge a situation. But to be able to, again, find that space of trust. And one of the real beauties of the principle of recalculating is to maintain an even emotional space more of the time in our lives. Because highs are great and everything, lows are less great. But if we know that we can recalculate and bring us back to an even emotional state, that's a very healthy, certainly healthy for our adrenals and our systems to be able to know what that feels like and have our nervous system feel calm and to bring ourselves back to that. I think that is actually true power.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because I've spoken to a lot of people that have had stunning successes during their careers or during their entrepreneurial journey. And often they say when they've kind of achieved a really big goal, they have this huge letdown, not because anything's gone wrong, but simply because they've had this massive high and now, okay, what's next?
You know, now what?
It leaves a gap. Yeah, now what?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I can understand that.
Mm. All right, so how do you work with customers then? I mean, I've seen some of your presentations. You do a lot of speaking. You do a lot of presentations, and some of those involve singing and recreating a GPS experience and telling stories there. So how do you work with people? Is it mainly through workshops like that, or is it one-on-one as well?
Sometimes it's workshops, but it's mainly as an opening and closing keynote speaker for national and international events. And, you know, I really see my role to customize what that message of recalculating to match with what the client is looking to deliver to their people, what outcomes they want for their people, what they want their people leaving and doing or thinking or saying. So generally it is because they want to inspire and empower their people to be able to navigate change powerfully. That's really the most frequent reason I am brought in. I am an entertaining keynote speaker and I share my story, how I grew up in Mackay in North Queensland and had a dream to be a professional singer and move to America. I went and I accomplished that. I was in New York City for 20 years, so I share those adventures and how my voice ended up in over a billion GPS and smartphones and elevators and cruise ships and software applications while I'm talking to you right now. And, you know, some of the pitfalls along the way, how difficult those times were and how I overcame them. And of course, then the building of the brand and the creating of the five directions for recalculating. So I think it resonates deeply because I am from a place in the middle of nowhere. I'm from a small town. And to come from somewhere small where there are, certainly at the time I was growing up, there were no professional musicians. And then to move from there and live in, you know, one of the, if not the greatest cities in the world, in New York City, and have that adventure and go on to record, I think I'm recording my 13th or my 14th album right now, and to perform in large settings and have a very public life. I think that given that I overcame chronic anxiety that I had as a child and had to manage through my adult years, I see a lot of nodding heads in audiences when I share about that and that, my goodness, so if she could overcome that and now be standing on a stage in front of us and have gone on to do all the things that I've done publicly, that perhaps there is hope for them to feel the confidence to take a step forward in something that they're dealing with in their own lives or their own businesses.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Comes back to what you were saying earlier about inspiring others. I'm a little curious chronic anxiety and a desire to fashion a music career almost
seems
at odds to me. So yeah. So how,
I know.
When did the two things kind of intersect and cross over, and how did you tackle that chronic anxiety?
Well, it was very confusing because I, from a really young age, knew that I wanted to be a professional singer and move to America. In fact, I was watching TV and I was 7 years old, on came the most influential and important person in the entire world, Olivia Newton-John. And when I saw her, my life changed. I knew what I wanted to do with my life. Even at that tender age, I knew I wanted to have a singing career and be just like her. And when I was around that time, when I was doing a performance in a school concert, a piano exam, or the Stedford singing contests, I would have such extreme abdominal pains that I would be home from school for a week at a time. They would take me to the doctor. They would do every test that existed at that time. And afterwards they'd come out to my parents and they'd say, Mr. and Mrs. Jacobson, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your daughter. It's just nerves. So in those days they called it nerves. They didn't even call it anxiety. And there was nothing that they could do for me. And I would then be preparing for the next big performance as a very young person. And I knew with all my heart that I wanted to be on stage sharing music. But my body was sending me these very confusing signals. So it was it was really tough. The desire to sing and to play music and to be on stage was greater than the physical anxiety, but only just. And it took a long time into my adult years before I had tools that I could use to be able to manage that anxiety. But yeah, thank you for asking that question that way. It's almost a cruel design of human nature, isn't it? To give somebody such a strong desire to be on the stage and such a feeling of dread, and then connect them in such a way that there's a no win, you know?
I sometimes wonder at what point. I mean, I know doing speaking and various other things where I was being judged, essentially. And I mean, if you go back, I know our kids were very gifted musicians. They went through all the Stedfords and things, and that's, you get judged when you perform there.
That's right.
And so, and either you win or you don't win. If you don't win, you sort of go, and we took great pains to help our kids deal with the times they didn't win. And we said, you know, that's just somebody's opinion and it doesn't mean you're no good. But that's kind of, unconsciously, we kind of take this away from a judgment that says somebody else was better. And so there's the comparison and, okay, I'm not good enough. And yet there's this intense desire to present something that you want to share with other people and you think will bring joy to other people. So letting go of the kind of judgment part and just focusing on that joy part, for me, I think was key to being able to get up and speak on stage without, I mean, I still get really nervous. And the more important is, the more nervous I get, but I just tell myself, okay, those nerves are because I want to do the best job I can for the people that I'm presenting to, the people I'm impacting. And that helps.
It does. And when I'm giving a masterclass to young performers or asked about being on stage and that shift for me, a very big piece of that shift happened when I learned that my focus was in the wrong place. My focus was about me and how nervous I felt. And that is because my focus was on doing a good job. Will people like me? It was all about myself and my own concerns about being accepted. And when I made that shift to putting my attention out there onto those people in the audience and my role as the vehicle, truly, of a message or of music, and that my whole purpose is to deliver something out there to those people, like that, to an audience, that was a big shift for me. I got my attention off myself and onto where that message was being delivered, which is easier said than done. It's been years and years of practicing that.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that is the key, and if you can master that, that's great. One of my guests a little while ago said something to me, and I thought, this is brilliant. They were talking about public speaking. And they said, you know, we get on stage as a public speaker and we think, oh, we're vulnerable. We're here in front of this audience of 1,000 people or however many it might be, and they're judging us, or they're thinking this person's good or not good or doesn't know what they're talking about or whatever. But the reality is they've given you the gift of their time and their presence. They could be somewhere else. They could be doing something else. And secondly, they actually want you to succeed because they've given you the gift of their time. They actually want to get value in return for that time. So they want you to succeed. They're not there to look at, well, this isn't any good, or pick holes or whatever. So they're actually supporting you indirectly. And her point was, if you look at it in that way, then it's the audience who's vulnerable, not the speaker, because the speaker has control. The speaker owns the stage. The speaker certainly has responsibility for delivering value to that audience. However, it's the audience who's actually vulnerable, because if they don't get value for that time they've invested, it's a lost opportunity for them. And if you sort of take that into account, you think, okay, yeah, it's not about me, it's about them.
Yeah, every time.
All right. One of the things that I was interested in, I mean, you've got your voice in millions of devices all around the world. You mentioned a few before. I wasn't aware that the elevator announcements, your voice was in
sometimes.
That too.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have an experience there that really moved you or changed your perspective, or kind of had you recalibrating something in your life?
I think it just continues to be quite striking to me that this has happened, and that, you know, I could walk along the street and see all the cars going past and get a little tiny bit of a sense of the fact that my voice is in close proximity to so many human beings. It is, it still amazes me that that happens to anybody, let alone to me.
Did you have any sense at all when you first recorded?
No, none at all.
Kind of consequences,
No, I didn't. But, you know, one thing that is I have thought about is, you know, as an individual human being, I think that our the essence of who we are can come through our voice. And it is interesting to me to think about, you know, I'm a very uplifted person. I'm a very upbeat person. I believe in creating, you know, the life that you would love. And I wonder about having a little bit of transmission through my voice that even though it is a voice system based on my speaking voice, that, you know, I'd like to think that there is something uplifting flowing through that's aligned with what I believe and what I stand for in the world, you know.
I wonder if in the future with all this artificial intelligence, whether there's not the opportunity to create apps, for example, affirmation apps. I'm thinking, you know, you open up your phone every day and you have your voice speaking my personal affirmation that I might have written, and I think, oh yes, that's great. I like that.
Yeah, I love that.
Different. It's different than you saying it to yourself in your own voice, because it
right.
probably doesn't have the same impact.
I love the sound of that.
All right. One of the things I have to share this with you as well. I talk back to you in the GPS from time to time.
Yes. I don't think you're the only one.
I'm not rude. I'm sort of my usual question is, how do you imagine me doing that? And it's usually in response to when it says, make a U-turn. And often it says, make a U-turn, and I'm on the freeway traveling at 100 kilometers an hour, and I've just passed the exit I need to take, or I, you know, that it had planned out in the route, just past that exit, and it says, oh, make a U-turn. Well, how do you imagine me doing that?
right. Well, I do have Yes, that they yell at me and that they will swear at me. And sometimes I let people know that I'm always available to take apologies.
Yes, well, I'm fairly kind in that moment.
Very but good.
We did have we did have one trip where I was with my daughter on the French motorway, and we had lots of make a U-turn in strange places.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fascinating. Actually, I did want to touch on your recalculated. You mentioned seven pillars.
Five.
Tell us just – oh, five. Five. I've got my numbers mixed up. Just tell us a little bit about those five pillars.
I will. To notice that you are off route, to be willing to change direction, to clarify your destination, to embrace the steering wheel, and to accelerate. So number one, to notice that you are off route, it's really that moment when you can do something about the fact that things haven't gone the way that you wanted them to go, is when you simply notice. Because sometimes we can be in a situation and so absorbed by that situation that we're not even noticing that we are off route. And that can continue for a long time. But it's that moment when we notice, when we bring awareness to it, then we can do something about it. Be willing to change direction. So we've noticed that things aren't going the way we'd love them to go. Now, being willing to change direction, being willing to take a different action to the actions we have been taking. And I do say that this is the most challenging of the five directions for recalculating, to be willing. And anybody who has had anything to do with toddlers, and as I'm discovering now, teenagers, if there is something you want them to do and they do not want to do it, it is not really possible to make them. With a toddler, maybe you can pick them up and remove them from a situation physically, but generally you cannot make them do something they do not want to do. And this is the same for adults. We are all the same. You cannot make a human being do something they do not want to do. And this is also related to ourselves. So we need to be willing. When we are willing to change direction, willing to take different actions to the actions we've been taking, that's really the magic, is to not be so staunch and stuck in our thinking or in our decision making. So we've noticed that we're off route. We're willing to change direction. The third direction is to clarify your destination. So now that you know that you're aware you're off route, you're open to doing things differently, take a look back and clarify the destination you wanted to be heading to. And take a look, are you still heading to that same destination, or has that destination changed? Are you on a detour to the same place, or has it shifted and you're willing to allow it to shift? That's clarifying your destination. The fourth direction is to embrace the steering wheel. This is where you are getting ready to go for it. So it's akin to putting your hands on the steering wheel and taking a deep breath and getting ready, G-ing yourself up to go for it. And the fifth and final direction for recalculating is to accelerate. This is all about action. And ideas are fantastic, but action is where it's at. So this is about taking an action in the direction of where you want to be headed, the new sometimes direction and destination where you want to be headed. So to notice you are off route, to be willing to change direction, to clarify your destination, to embrace the steering wheel, and to accelerate. Those are the five directions for recalculating.
Excellent. Well, thanks for clarifying that for us, outlining that. That's pretty clear, and it's great sort of connection with that metaphor. It's pretty easy to remember, really.
What's really handy is you can use that five-step process for a tiny recalculation or a major life recalculation. And there are those of us who like to have a checklist. We like to be able to write something down, to look at it, to work through it. Others who are not wired that way, but for those who are, it can be a very handy five-step process.
And as you say, you can kind of break some big change down into small steps that are part of that change or lead to that change. And then for each of those small steps, you can use that five-step process.
That's right.
Excellent. Well, we could go on talking for ages about all kinds of things, GPS stuff and the metaphor and the work you're doing. But I think it's a good point now to go on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same five questions I ask of every guest. And the idea is that you'll give us a short answer that will inspire the listener to take some action today as a result of what you've said.
Awesome.
You ready?
Yes.
What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Meditate every day.
Do you have a favorite kind of means to do that or form that you do?
I do. I meditate twice a day. I studied TM, which is Transcendental Meditation. I went and did a very short several-day course. They teach an effortless form of meditation. So I meditate for 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the afternoon every day. And I have not missed a day of meditation. I began meditating on July 7th, 2011. It's my experience, and I firmly believe that it is the cumulative effect of meditating every single day and keeping that promise to yourself. And why that is my answer to your question of the number one thing to do to be innovative is it really cuts through all of the noise of life, and you are left with yourself, your true self, your inner self, however you want to describe it. I like to call it your inner GPS. And that is our own inner guidance is the most powerful.
And if you get into that state, that's when ideas bubble up, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Where did that come from?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
What is the best thing I've done to develop new ideas? Well, I would say to listen to that inner GPS. Because there are times when I haven't, and I've thought, well, that isn't the way to go. Other people must know better than me. And I've done what I think other people want me to do or what they say they want me to do. And it's the times when I do stop the action and center myself and listen to that that inner guidance. And that is where I find the best results.
So it's important to kind of have confidence in oneself in that moment, isn't it? To say, well, that is a good idea. Let's explore that some more.
Yes, and we've all had those experiences where we listened to other people and did it their way and it didn't work out. And then we thought, I should have followed my own idea. And then we've had the opposite where everyone's saying, that's a terrible idea. And you say, no, I know it's right. And you do it and it works. And they go, that was brilliant.
Yes. And there's probably the odd occasion where it does fall over, but that's all right. That's a learning experience.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource you use most often? Aside from the GPS in your car.
Resource that I use most often. Well, it would really be the piano for me because I am a songwriter. So for me, it is music would be my answer to that one. Yeah.
Yes, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but you did a whole, is it an opera or something, based on the misogyny speech that our former Prime Minister Julia Gillard gave. And for those people that aren't from Australia and don't know about this, two-sentence snapshot, the Australian Parliament probably still is a little misogynistic, but in those days was very misogynistic, and there was an opposition leader that pretty much tried to belittle our Prime Minister, who was the first woman Prime Minister of Australia, and she gave this fiery speech that was just brilliant, and you've put the whole thing to music.
I have the entire misogyny speech to music, and I will just say misogyny is the ingrained prejudice against women, and I will say that because it is pretty eye-opening, but many, many people do not know what that word means. So this is a project that I created. It's an equality project. So thank you for knowing what it is and for mentioning it. Yes, but I created an entire pop orchestral work setting that speech to music.
Yeah, and I encourage people to listen to that and also listen to the original speech, which you can find on YouTube, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Because it is, I found it very moving. Yeah, you know, as a male, I found that very moving at the time because the person it was directed at, I thought, was behaving in a completely unacceptable manner. So,
thank you.
We'll leave it at that. The best way to keep a client on track.
The best way to keep a client on track is to tell the truth, and that may not feel convenient. I notice I didn't your question wasn't how to keep the client but how to keep the client on track, and sometimes the person telling the truth it can be difficult to hear those things, but it's certainly my thinking that we serve our clients best when we are really straight in our communication.
Yeah, and I like that you said it doesn't necessarily mean keeping the client, because part of acting in the client's best interest always is there will be times, and I've had this situation and I've confronted it in this manner and said that I don't think we're a good fit for one another. There was one occasion and a couple of occasions where I said, what you're wanting to do here is beyond my capabilities and skill set right now, and I think you're better served going to somebody else. And where it was a skill set thing, I was able to refer them on to people that had the appropriate skills. And I think that's part of that honesty that you mentioned as well.
Brilliant.
All right. And the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Well, I would suggest that taking a look at what you absolutely love spending your time doing and seeing how you can incorporate that into your personal brand. And we all have a personal brand, whether we work for another organization or not. And I think there is a lot of power in owning who we are and what excites us and inspires us in our own lives, and how to incorporate that into our persona or our personal brand and be known for that. That helps to make us visible and memorable.
Yeah, it comes back a little bit to what we were talking about before in terms of letting those ideas and thoughts bubble up, but also having the confidence to say, this is the stuff that I really enjoy, here's where I think I add value, and really just putting that out there in a way that serves the right people.
I think confidence, you've mentioned that word several times, and I have as well. Confidence is key. It is so very important. And putting ourselves out there can be very uncomfortable. And things don't always work out. We'll put ourselves out there. We have the front or the confidence to do that. If it doesn't work out, to be able to be confident in the decision that we have made, that we did that. That can really take something.
Yes, it's easy when it's successful and then there's another success and another success, because that builds confidence. When you have a setback, that's when you've got to be able to deal with, like, it's almost like you're making a withdrawal from the confidence account.
That's right.
And you need to have, yeah.
Yes, and you know, I do I address this in my keynotes. All of us, it's part of the human condition to feel like we're not enough. Every single one of us, even those we put on pedestals and think are the most incredibly important leaders of our times, have an experience of not enough. And when we're able to remember that that is something that is part of the human condition, and it is not a failing of us to have that experience, I think that can be very comforting. I know I find that comforting.
Yes, so embrace your humanness. Excellent. Well, thanks, Karen. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you, the work you do, get a hold of your books? We know where they can listen to your voice.
Yes, I'm everywhere.
But where can they find out more and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared, or share some new stories, GPS stories with you?
Amazing. Well, I love to connect with others on LinkedIn. So I'm there, Karen Jacobson with an S-E-N, and on other socials, but also at karenjacobson.com and at thegpsgirl.com, YouTube. A lot of video to watch, music to listen to, or on streaming platforms. So, yeah, the websites or LinkedIn or other socials. I know that's a lot of options, but people have their favorites. And
yep.
I would just invite those who've joined us today to remember that it is never too late to recalculate.
Excellent. All right. Well, before we wrap up, what action would you like our listener to take out of our conversation today?
Oh, wow. Well, out of our conversation today, I would like to offer that if you you're listening and you haven't explored mindfulness or meditation, or you have and you think you're not good at it, I'm here to tell you there is no such thing as not being good at it. If you're having a lot of thoughts while you are meditating, then you are doing it right, and it can take some building up to. So I highly recommend at least 2 minutes a day. Everybody can find 2 minutes where you close your eyes and breathe in and out, set a timer for 2 minutes. But the real magic is in doing it every single day.
Consistency, yeah. And hats off to you for doing it for, 13 years? For
a couple, a long time. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's impressive, yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks so much for the conversation today. I've really enjoyed it. I've really had a lot of fun as well, and I look forward to hearing you again in the car the next time I'm out driving.
You can't escape me. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Yeah, and please do stay in touch.
Would love that.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.